Okay, I want to dedicate the shiur Le'ili Nishmas, my Rebbe, my Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Chaim Stein. Okay, we're in the middle of discussing the second Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omed, Al HaTorah, Al HaAvoda, V'Al Gemilas Chasadim. And we were discussing in detail till now how the world exists on Torah, and now we will discuss how the world exists on Avoda and Gemilus Chasodim. Start with Avoda. Avoda means karbanos, specifically the sacrificial service in the Beis HaMikdash, that is Avoda. And today, what takes the place of Avoda is Tefillah, is Davening. Davening has two aspects to it. The Gemara says that Miyom Shenechrav Beis HaMikdash, Afal Pi Shesharei Tefillah Ninalu, Sharei Dima Lo Ninalu. From the time the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the gates of prayer have been locked, but the gates of tears have not been locked. And Rashi says that it means that when you cry, when you daven, then the gates are opened. But on the surface, it would seem that there are two different gates. It says, this gates are closed and these gates are opened. Seems that there's only one set of gates. It depends how you daven. But I want to explain that it means something completely different. It doesn't mean necessarily if you cry when you daven, then the gates are open. If you don't cry, then they're closed. There are two kinds of prayer. And the same thing goes for sacrifices. There are two different aspects, completely different aspects of how prayer works and how sacrifices work. Both are true. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, both of them were in force. And now, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, one has been diminished. The Sfarim say, even though the gates are locked, the gates of prayer are locked, since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but every good yeshiva bacher knows that even through locked gates, you can get in if you climb over them or burrow under them or pick the lock or whatever. Doesn't mean that you can't get in. Just more difficult. So even locked gates, you can get in. Except these are diminished, and the other kind of prayer and is not diminished. Just one second, we'll discuss the two kinds. In addition, if the gates of tears are not locked, then why do you need gates for them? If they're always opened, then why is it important that there are gates altogether? So they say because there are kosher tears and there are unfit tears, and therefore you need gates. For the kind of tears that are positive, which we'll get to and explain what they are, there the gates are open. But for the kind of tears that are unfit, there the gates are closed. So even though the gates are never locked, but you still need gates in order to prevent the unfit tears from taking effect. Okay, so now with all of that said, let's explain what the two kinds of avoda are. The first kind is a very aggressive and very positive kind of effect. And that is the following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world in a very orderly fashion. And he created a spiritual world that interfaces with the physical world, and all of the physical things in this world result from spiritual forces that come before them. Meaning the following. We know that even in the physical world, nothing just happens all of a sudden. but things are put into motion gradually, right? If it's going to rain in a few days, you can see already the forces set into nature that are going to bring that rain about. Most probably, things can change, and there can be changes in the forces. But if you see that there are clouds 100 miles away, and the wind is blowing at a certain speed towards a certain direction, moving those clouds, then you can extrapolate that within a certain amount of time, those clouds will come to this place, and the potential for rain is there. So you see the forces of nature being put into motion, and you can deduce from that and extrapolate from that what those forces are going to cause in the near future. The truth is that that is not how things happen alone, that forces of nature, physical nature, are put into motion. But before any forces of physical nature are put into motion, there are spiritual forces that are put into motion. The Gemara says that in the following way, that there is no blade of grass that grows unless there's a malach over it saying grow, telling it to grow. Now, you can understand that literally, that they're little winged beings invisible over every blade of grass that cause that grass to grow. But what it really means is angels are spiritual forces that God created in order to cause various results. And just like when you put a seed in the ground, there is some physical force that triggers that seed to start to grow. As long as it was in the packet, it didn't grow. When you took it and you put it in the earth and you watered it, so the moist earth and the environment it's in somehow triggers the cells of that seed to start to grow. So there is a trigger before all of that. Before the cell itself is triggered to start to multiply and to grow, there's a spiritual force that has to be set into motion, which is called an angel. And that spiritual force triggers the physical forces into motion. That's what it means, that nothing happens in this world unless an angel is behind it, meaning a spiritual force that triggers that physical force. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a very orderly world with physical forces that cause other physical forces that cause results, and spiritual forces that trigger those physical forces into being. So if there's going to be bread in the world, and wheat is going to grow, there has to be spiritual forces that are set into motion. And at the top of these forces, both physical and spiritual, is God. The Ribbono Shel Olam is the one who sets his influence into the world and sets all these spiritual and physical forces into motion. But he created an orderly world, and he is the source of all this power, but it filters through an orderly system. Now, that system is created in the image, or man is created in the image of that system. When God created the system of powers, spiritual powers, he created it according to the scheme of human beings, of man, meaning that those powers have a head, and they have arms, and they have a body and legs, not the way we see it, not a head with the shape that we see it, or arms in the shape that we see it, but they are spiritual powers that correspond to arms in a body, to legs in a body, to eyes and ears, and so on. And God created man to have a connection to those spiritual forces. And when we do mitzvahs and learn Torah and daven, we set those spiritual forces into motion. In other words, God says, I want to send my spiritual influence into the world and cause physical, material results that are for the good of the world. But I want you to be the cause of it. I want you to be the ones to trigger it. So I gave you a Torah, and I gave you mitzvos, and I gave you Torah learning, and I gave you the ability to daven, and that creates the energy which then comes back into this world, sets this master motor into motion. All of these powers into motion, where eventually they come into this world. So we are the masters of our fate. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam is constantly influencing spiritual powers, spiritual influence that would come into this world and end up as very, very good results. Food and peace and all the different good things that come into the world. But in order to get that the mechanism moving, it needs energy. It needs an energy source. The energy source is us. And what we do with our arms corresponds to those powers that are part of the arms of creation. What we do with our head corresponds to the head of creation. And we are pretty much linked up. That is called Tselem Elohim. Elohim is God in nature. How the Rabbeinu Shel Olam attaches himself to this physical world by his influence, his spiritual force filtering into this world. And it filters through what is called Elohim. Elohim, again, is God as he connects himself to this world. In fact, the name Elohim has the same numerical value as Hateva, as nature. God in nature is what we call Elohim, because it represents all of the powers that God influences and that God sends into this world. And since it represents many, many different powers, they all emanate from God, it's the plural. Elohim is the God who is the source of all those powers. So Elohim is in the plural. We are created B'Tselem Elohim. We are created in the image of Elohim. Elohim means how God connects himself to the physical world from a spiritual standpoint, what all of the spiritual connections are, and we said they form a spiritual body with powers that have a connection to what we call a head, powers that what we call an arms and legs, conceptually. And therefore, we are created in the image of that connection of God to the physical world, and what we do with our arms affects the arms of creation, the head of creation, and so on. So that's called Tselem Elohim. And therefore, one of the ways to induce these spiritual powers that God is constantly they're constantly emanating from God, but they need to have a trigger to start the mechanism working to bring it into this world. One of the means of doing that is called tefillah, is davening. We daven, and by davening we trigger the mechanism of the spiritual world to start moving and bring God's influence into this world. And that is the idea of a bracha. A bracha, according to the Rashba, according to others, Nefesh HaChaim speaks about it. Bracha means to increase. Comes from the word brecha, a spring. So a bracha means I invoke an increase of God's powers coming into the world. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam, when I say a bracha, I'm saying the following. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu melech olam, you Rabbono shel olam, who is a God beyond time, beyond place, you are above the world, you don't exist within the world, but you chose to connect yourself to the world. Baruch, first start, atah Hashem, you God are Hashem, beyond time, beyond place, right? But Elokeinu melech olam, you chose to also connect yourself and be the king of this world. And you did it in such a way that you created powers that emanate from you that bring certain results into this world. For instance, Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz. The Ribbono Shel Olam showers the world with an influence that causes seeds to grow and wheat to grow and give the potential for there to be bread in the world. So I want, Ribbono Shel Olam, Baruch, I want that power that you influence into the world to increase. And by doing that, I trigger the power of that God influences in the world for the production of bread. I trigger that and cause that power, that influence to come into the world through my tefillah. By making that bracha, I increase that power that God influences in the world, but his will is that it shouldn't come into the world unless we bring it into the world, unless we set that mechanism into motion. So that's God's will. So by making that bracha, by davening, by doing a mitzvah, by learning Torah, I initiate that God's will should come into the world, his influence. So by making a bracha specifically on bread, what I'm saying is, Atah Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, I know that you are not within this world, you're not limited by the world, you're not limited by time or place, you're Hashem, Yudke Vavke. But you are also Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. You chose to be the king of the world, to create a world and to connect yourself to that world by influencing the world with your spiritual influence. And one of those influences is Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz, or Borei Pri Haetz, or Borei Pri HaAdama. I'm asking you, Ribbono Shel Olam, Baruch, to increase that connection. And by doing that, we invoke God's then Taka putting his influence into the world, because his will is that he shouldn't do it shouldn't work unless we create the energy source for that system to work, for that mechanism to get set into motion. Okay, have I lost you all, or okay.
Is it sort of like an electric switch? We switch it on and
right, exactly. There's in other words, like this. Let me give you a simple example. Okay, God has created pretzels, okay, an abundance of pretzels, and he wants to shower them into this world. There's a machine that brings pretzels into the world, okay? But God said the machine has all kinds of the gears that set other gears into motion. When you put your quarter into a machine, right, or your shekel, and you push a button, and all of a sudden comes out a can of soda or a bag of pretzels. Okay, let's go back to the pretzels. So you push a button, and it sets the gears in motion that will deposit those pretzels in the bottom so you can have them. Okay? But the pretzels are in the machine. They're there, just waiting to come out. But the person who put the machine into motion will not let you get those pretzels unless you put your money in. Okay? So too, the Ribbono Shel Olam has a wealth of pretzels to give into the world in all different forms. Okay? It's there. But it depends on setting the mechanism of depositing those pretzels into this world into motion. What sets them into motion is we have to push the buttons and we have to provide the money. The money is called Torah, Mitzvah, Davening. That is the money, and by pushing the right buttons, after we deposit our money with the davening and whatever, and we push the right buttons, then that triggers those things to come into the world. So the world is a gigantic machine, and the machine takes the form, conceptually, of a human body with a head and arms and legs and whatever, and the pretzels, let's say, are on the right arm, and the potato chips are on the left arm, and the soda is on the left leg, right, and the juices are on the right leg. And the buttons, right, to push correspond to where these things are. So if you push the button that's on the right side of the right arm of the machine, you'll get pretzels. If you push the button that's on the left side arm of the machine, you'll get potato chips. And on the legs, you'll get juices or soda. So the machine itself, and could be, that in order to really trigger the machine, it's not enough to push it with your finger. Your finger will help, your right arm will help to push the right arm part of the machine. But you need your left leg to push the left leg part of the machine, and so on. And therefore, the mitzvahs we do with things that have to do with arms, legs, or whatever, it's not just simple mitzvahs you do with your leg, but things that are connected to those parts of the body are connected, therefore, to those parts of the universe. And it's the mitzvahs and the davening that we do that creates the energy source, which then sets that mechanism into motion that God controls and brings that influence into the world. So when I make a bracha or I daven, I'm basically saying, Rabbona Shel Olam, I want that power that you want to bring into this world to be increased and to be set into motion so it comes in the world. And because God chooses to function in the world through us, that's the purpose of this world. The purpose of the world is that we should do things that merit us reward, so we earn and create our world to come. So by functioning in a way that the world, functions properly, that's how we bring ourselves to perfection and the world to perfection. So God's wants us to be dynamic in bringing the world to perfection. He set up the system, the mechanism, but he wants us to be dynamic in bringing it about. That is, yeah.
So the brachot, I understand how they increase abundance, but they come in place of the, or not in place, but partly in place of the korbanot. How do the korbanot?
No. So therefore, korbanot are called as korbani lachmi liishai. It's God's bread. Now God doesn't need to eat, not bread, not cereal, not anything. Right? He doesn't have to eat. But the idea is that God, as he connects himself to the physical world, right, created a necessity for there to be energy to set that physical world into motion. That energy is created by sacrifices in one way that is called the food of the worlds. Not God's food, but it's the food. Meaning, what is food? Food is calories. What's calories? Energy. The energy that sets the mechanism of the world into motion, one of the things that provides that energy is sacrifices. And the various sacrifices provide various different energy sources for different parts of that mechanism. So that's one way that sacrifices work. That is a very aggressive, positive thing, and that every bit of energy has to have a power source to it, a charger, right? You can't just give energy unless you have an electric plant, and the electric plant creates the energy, and then I can take from my house and push a button and get energy. But if I don't have the power plant, then my house isn't going to be able to have the energy coming into it that I can then set into motion. Where is the power plant of all the energy that God created that I can make use of through my davening, specifically since we're speaking about davening? That power plant was called the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash was the ultimate power plant of the world. And everybody drew their ability to create the energy through their davening from the Beis HaMikdash. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that aspect was diminished very greatly. The power plant is no longer the full kilowatt hours that it represented. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. There's still Shechina in that place, so there's still some kind of energy coming out of there, but it's nothing compared to what it was when there was a Beis HaMikdash. So since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Shari Tfila Ninalu, right? The gates of prayer, the way we described it, the kind of prayer that is aggressive, powerful, what's it called? Active. That kind of prayer has been diminished. The gates are locked. It's difficult to make use of them unless you really push yourself to climb over them or whatever. So you can still have that kind of tefillah, but it's been diminished. Since the power plant that supplied the energy that we can use to create that energy in the spiritual worlds has been diminished. But Shari Dima Lo Ninalu. But there's another aspect of sacrifices and of prayer that has not been diminished at all. And both of them are true. So one we described, now let's describe the other one. The other one is completely different. The other one is not an active, aggressive kind of force. It's just the opposite. The avoda is that I totally subjugate myself and negate myself to God. Meaning the following. God said that he's not going to bring his influence into this world unless we trigger it. That was one thing. There's another way of bringing God's influence into the world. By totally negating ourselves and attaching ourselves and subjugating ourselves to God. If that's the case, then we bring that influence into the world by us totally acquiescing to God and saying that we can't do it on our own. We need God's help. We need you to do it, Rav Unser. We can't do it. Especially now when there is no Beis HaMikdash, our efforts to do anything has been very much limited and diminished. So we need you, Rav Unser, by making that statement, but not just saying it, meaning it, believing it. We therefore attach ourselves to the Ribbono Shel Olam, totally negate ourselves, and then God's influence comes into the world, not because we caused it, but because we admitted that we can't do it on our own, and therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam does it for us. Because then it becomes automatic, right? We get right to the source, okay? Meaning the following, probably. Let's go back to the machine. I never carried this marshal more, so I'm thinking as I'm talking, which is not really good. Not that I don't think when I talk before, but I usually think before I talk. Now I'm thinking as I talk. So let's work it out what it means. Let's say a person comes to the machine and he really needs pretzels. He's starving, okay? Comes to the pretzel machine and he has no money. And he's paralyzed. He can't push the button, even if he had money. He's really out of it. There's no way that he can cause this machine to bring the pretzels with his own power. He doesn't have any money, and even if he had money, he can't push the buttons because he's paralyzed. So the person who runs the machine, right, is bringing now a new supply of pretzels to put into the machine for people to buy. And I'm standing in front of the machine and the pretzel man is there. The owner of the machine is there. And I say to him, have mercy on me. I don't have any money and I can't push the buttons. Give me some pretzels. And he has rachmanis on me and he realizes there's no way that I can do it on my own, so he does it for me. And he gives me the bag of pretzels for free. That is the same idea here. Right? We are in a situation where we don't have the ability, not the money or the ability to push the buttons. Okay? Some people do. Sometimes we do. Again, it's diminished, not completely taken away. But it's very much diminished. So we tell the Ribbono Shel Olam the following. Ribbono Shel Olam, I can't do it on my own. I don't have that power. I need you, but I need that you send your influence to the world. So I am admitting that I can't do it, and therefore I need you to do it for me. That admission takes the place of the aggressive, active kind of triggering God's influence into the world. That admission brings God's influence into the world. That is called Shari Dima. That's the gates of tears. Tears, crying, represents where I feel helpless. Not hopeless, but helpless. We said there are tears that are fit. Those are tears of helplessness. I don't feel I can do it myself. Ribbono Shel'olam, help me. Hopelessness, where I give up hope and I cry that I feel abandoned and there's no hope at all, those kind of tears are completely possible. That was the difference between the tears they cried on Tisha B'Av in the Midbar and the tears that we cry on Tisha B'Av in order to correct that. In the Midbar, the spies came back and they said it is impossible for us to conquer Eretz Yisrael. So the people gave up hope. They lost hope. They felt they were abandoned by God and they cried. Right? They cried basically saying, God, we can't do it, therefore it can't be done, and we are lost. Everything is hopeless. Those kind of tears are called b'chiyah shel chinam. They're worthless tears because they're not true. Nothing is ever hopeless. And nobody is ever abandoned. The Ribbono Shel Olam is always there. And if you can't do it, the Ribbono Shel Olam will do it for you. So, on Tisha B'Av, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you cry then. A crying of chinam. The chiyah shel chinam, a worthless crying. And the ekpalachem, in one place it says, b'chiyah ledoros, a crying for all generations. But not stam, to cry. B'chiyah shel mamish. You're going to cry a good crying, and that will correct the crying you did then. And it's going to take a long time to correct those tears. But l'maisa, the positive tears, correct what the negative. What's the positive tears? The positive tears we cry on Tisha B'Av is, Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't do it on our own. We can't redeem ourselves. As much as we try, it doesn't work. The Ribbono Shel Olam is Goel Yisrael. God is the Redeemer. He took us out of Egypt. He took us. He redeemed us throughout the generations. We can't do it. We have to be fit to be redeemed, but we can't do the redemption. So we say, Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't do it. But we know that if we can't do it, it still can be done because you can do it. So please help us. That kind of crying is like the crying of a baby. A baby. Right? Why does a baby cry? Not because it gave up hope. The baby knows that it is uncomfortable. Something is wrong. It's hungry, it's wet, it's cold. Something is wrong. But the baby is too young to even conceptualize what exactly it is that's wrong. Or surely how to take care of it. Can't do it on his own. Can't feed himself. Can't clothe himself. Can't change himself. But he knows instinctively, and then he learns it through actions, that if he makes enough noise and cries, there will very shortly be a figure of a human being, usually in the shape of a woman, who will come and right away know what's wrong and how to take care of it and right the situation. That's the baby's crying. That's the crying we cry on Tisha B'Av. And that's why the crying we do is called kinos, because kinos is the same letters as tinok, as a baby. Because it's that kind of crying that we cry. Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't do it. But that doesn't mean it can't be done. That doesn't mean things are hopeless. It just means that we need you to do it. That is totally negating yourself and subjugating yourself to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then the same result that would have come in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, where we created the energy source to bring these powers into the world that the Ribbono Shel Olam influences and emanate from him, now come into the world because we understand that it's coming from God, that we can't do it, and we totally put ourselves in God's hands. Like a baby into the hands of the mother. That's why in the first kind of tefillah and brachos, it says whoever eats without a bracha is like he's stealing. Now what in the world is making a bracha help if it's like stealing from the world, right? Because Hashemayim, Shemayim, it says, Lashem ha'aretz u'maloa, everything belongs to God. And then it says that The heavens belong to God, and he gave the earth to human beings. So the Gemara says that's before the bracha, everything belongs to God. After you make the bracha, God gave it to you. So if you take it without the bracha, you're taking it without permission. That's like stealing. But how in the world is a bracha, right? I can understand, do it without permission. But how does the bracha take away? I can't go to somebody's house and make a bracha and take their things, right? Because if I make a bracha, it's okay. But according to this idea, the idea is, if I take things from the world and I don't make a bracha, then I am depleting that power in the world and not replacing it. But if I make a bracha, I am increasing that spiritual power that brings bread into the world, even though I'm taking physical bread out of the world. So I've paid for the bread. I have replaced the spiritual powers that eventually will result in more bread coming into the world, and that which I have depleted, I have replaced. So I'm not stealing. But if I deplete something and don't replace it, then that's stealing. So those are the two kinds of tefillah. There is the tefillah that's an active tefillah, an aggressive tefillah, positive force. That was most effective in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Once the Beis HaMikdash, because that was the power plant that brought all this energy that I can then direct and trigger into the world. Once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and the major power plant was destroyed and the energy level is much less, so that kind of tefillah has been diminished. But the other kind of tefillah hasn't been diminished. That's the kind of tefillah that's passive. That is the kind of tefillah that's represented by tears, where I tell the Rabbanu Shalom, Rabbanu Shalom, I can't do it on my own. I know I can't do it. But I know that if I admit it, and I say it, and feel it, and believe it, that you can do it for me. And I put myself totally into your hands, and therefore in that respect, davening is not so much asking for anything, but it's a statement. Rifo'enu Hashem v'nei rofe. I believe, Rabbanu Shalom, that if you don't heal me, I can't be healed. I can go to the greatest doctors in the world. They are only shluchim of the Rabbanu. If the Rabbanu Shalom wants me to be healed, then he wants me to be healed through the agency of natural means. I have to go to the doctor. But ultimately, whether it's going to be successful or not is in the hands of the Rabbanu Shalom. And if the Rabbanu Shalom doesn't want me to be healed, the doctor can do everything right and the person still dies. And if the Rabbanu Shalom wants a person to live, the doctor can do everything wrong. And the person will still live. Doesn't mean you shouldn't go to a doctor. Doesn't mean you shouldn't go to the best doctor. Because that's Ratzon Hashem, that you should do it in a way that's natural. And do it in the most natural way. The better the doctor, the more natural it is that you're cured. But ultimately, the doctor does not cure you. Ultimately, the cure is in the hands of the Rabbanu Shalom. The doctor is merely like any hishtadlus. Person goes to work. Right? That does not make his living. You don't make a living. You go to work, and because you went to work and you did your hishtadlus, the Rabbanu Shalom will give you a living. Because you can go to work and you won't get a living. You won't make, you, if you make your living, it means you're the cause. You work, you cause your living. Right? If you dig ditches, right, how does that cause you to be able to eat? There's no connection. Elamai, you get a paycheck? Who said you get the paycheck? Maybe your boss will decide not to pay you. Maybe he'll drop dead. Maybe all the banks will fail. So you can take money with wheelbarrows like they did in Germany before World War I. Right? And the money will be worth nothing. You could be a millionaire and be a poor person. So there's no guarantee. And there's no guarantee that even if you get paid that you'll have a parnasa, because maybe you won't be able to eat. You'll get lockjaw. You won't be able to put the food in your mouth. So ultimately, you don't make a living. God is the one who provides the living. You have to fulfill a prerequisite. You have to fulfill a condition. The condition is that you make any hishtadlus, that you put in a reasonable effort to earn that living. And then, if you do, the Rabbanu Shalom will provide that living for you. If the Rabbanu Shalom decides he doesn't want to provide the living, you can do everything right, and you won't make a living. There are people who have all the right credentials. They went to college and they have college degrees, and on paper, they should be making a great, great living. And because of circumstances beyond their control, they got these degrees in Russia, came to America, and there was a glut of engineers and doctors and all the things they had degrees for. So they couldn't get a job. So what were they doing? Burrowing around in garbage cans for their meal, or cleaning doctors' offices, when they were bigger doctors than the doctor's office they were cleaning. And the opposite is also true. You can do something that on paper doesn't make any sense, that this is going to make you a living, and become a millionaire. Examples I like to give always are Pet Rocks. Years ago, right, somebody came up with this genius idea that if he puts a rock, a regular, ordinary rock, right, into a box, prints on the box what looks like a cage, so the box looks like a cage, print up a sheet of instructions how to take care of this pet rock, give the rock a name, so the rock has a name, now you know what your pet, when you buy it, you know what the rock is called, so you don't call him something else, so he won't answer you. The pet rock doesn't have to eat, it doesn't have to be walked, very cheap and easy pet. Now, if I would come to you and ask you, I have this great idea, you want to invest in it, right? You'd look at me like I'm an absolute idiot. Who in the world is going to spend a penny for a rock in a box with a bunch of what's it called, instructions, when he can go out and get a whole zoo full of rocks for free outside? Make his own box, print up your own instructions, and you have for free what you can buy. And they sold it for $10, $9.99. That was years ago. Who in the world, what idiot would buy something for $10 that he could go outside and get for free? But there are a lot of idiots in America. It became a fad. What? Oh yeah, that's the next example. Right? So that was it. So people bought pet rocks, and the man became a millionaire overnight. Makes sense? No. The Rav Amram wanted that person to be a millionaire, put this crazy idea into his head. Nobody would ever have thought that this is going to be successful, and that was it. Cabbage patch dolls. Right? Dolls that were so ugly that a mother couldn't love it. Now, who in the world would think that anybody would buy their daughter an ugly doll? Right? Why in the world would a girl want to have an ugly doll? But it sold. It became a fad. And people bought them. Dafka. And they spent good money on them. And the person became a millionaire. So you can do everything right and get every degree in the book that says that you'll make a great living and you can be scrounging around in the garbage can for food. And you can do everything wrong and you'll make a nice living. Right? That doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to do what's right. But it does mean that ultimately it's not cause and effect. So acknowledging that by davening, by making a bracha, put yourself into God's hands, and then he'll do it for you. It's like standing in front of the machine and saying, God, I don't have money. I can't even move my arm to push the button if I had money. You're the one with the pretzels, right? Could you give me the bag of pretzels? Forget about the machine. And then the Rabban Mishlam will give. His Rahman is on you. Yeah?
I wanted to just give an example. Sometimes a person does their hishtadlus in one direction. Hashem doesn't give the answer in that direction. He brings it from somewhere else. I just want to give one small example. We run a travel, a Sahnul Tarot Nofesh. And sometimes we put ads in this magazine and that paper and everything. And every person that calls, they say, where'd you see us? We found you on the internet, or we found you from a friend, or whatever. So I said, you do your hishtadlus. And if Hashem is going to send it, he's going to send it from whatever source he's going to send it from, not necessarily what you put in. But let's say you didn't put in at all, maybe Hashem would see you didn't do your hishtadlus. When you do your hishtadlus, it doesn't mean it's going to come from the direction you did it. It's just going to come from wherever Hashem is going to send it.
A similar story. There was a Rosh Hashiva. He had a fundraiser that he sent to raise funds for his yeshiva. And the person was dismally a failure. He went and he got kemat nothing. Kemat nothing. Right? I mean, commiserate with that, since I go raising funds for my yeshiva often, and I am probably the worst fundraiser that there is in existence. And I know that if I put in the Hishtadlus, it's probably going to fail in where I think it's going to come from. I remember somebody once told me in Cleveland that we were raising money for our, at that time, for our yeshuv, for the moshav. And somebody said, there's somebody who doesn't want to give to yeshivas or whatever, everybody gives to yeshivas, but he's very interested in Eretz Yisrael and in what's it called, you know, in yeshuvim, and he's a very wealthy person, go see him. So I got my hopes up, wow, this guy is probably going to be able to, who knows what, bankroll the whole yeshuv. It was a snowy day in Cleveland, snow to your knees. You had to wear boots until you got the boots off and whatever. I got into the house, and a young girl comes to the door, and it was early in the evening. It was about 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. The house was dark, and she comes to the door. She sees, you know, who I am, but even now, not even asking what I'm here for, to see anything. She runs up to her parents, who are already in the bedroom. She comes down and said, my father said, here's a dollar. Thank you. That was that. In any case, so sometimes you can do what you think is going to be success and not. And then, in the end, it comes from somewhere else completely. Right? Somebody calls up and says, I decided I'd like to give your institution $10,000. Did I ever ask you? Do I even know who you are? No. Just I heard about something and I have an extra $10,000 to give and I decided I want to give it to you. That's also happened. Not often, but it happens. In any case, so there was a Rosh Shiva who sent this fundraiser, and he was a dismal failure. Came back with almost nothing. 2 days later, somebody walks into the office of the yeshiva and sets down a check for $25,000. Just like this. So Rosh Shiva calls in the fundraiser, and he says, I want to give you Yasher Koach. He said, I hate to say this, I don't know who that person is. He wasn't born on my list. I never spoke to him. He said, no, I know that. He said, but we have to do our Hishtadlus. You went and put in the effort. And the Rabban Shalom paid the effort in a different way. It didn't have to come from what if it's cause and effect, then it has to come from what you cause. But if it's just you fulfilled the condition, you fulfilled the condition for us, and now the Rabban Shalom decided to send it to somebody else. So it's your Yasher Koach. You put in the work, you fulfilled the condition. Exactly what you're saying. In any case, so that is how Avoda, the world, Ha'olam Omeid an Avoda. Because the whole world, what happens in this world, and the continuation of the existence of the world, depends on our avoda, on our either pushing the buttons and putting the money in the machine, or at least admitting that we can't push the buttons and we can't put the money in the machine because we have no money, and then bringing God's influence into the world because we declare and believe that we are totally dependent on Him. Those are the two kinds of avoda, and the world stands on those two kinds of avoda just as much as it stands on Torah, as we explained before. Next week we will explain chesed, how kindness, doing gemilus chasodim, keeps the world going, and then we will go on to the next mission.